The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Heard a good conspiracy theory? This is the day for you, 770-5633-770-KMED. By the way, if you want to email the show, email Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. Proud to be heard all over Southern Oregon, 106.3 KMED, 106.7's translator in South Jackson County, 105.9 for Grants Pass, and also my morning show is on 99.3 KPXG all the way out through all of Josephine County, wherever you are. And there's also KMED.com. You can enable the KMED skill on Alexa and stream it there. Stream it on I think I did say KMED.com, right? Yeah, I did. Okay. Anyway, also on Facebook Live, and we have that up there right now, the proverbial face for radio, but I'm glad that you're here. Welcome to the show. Now then, coming up today, we're going to be talking to Dr. John Lott, and the FBI quietly revised its crime statistics, and you know, he's a crime statistic guy, Crime Research Foundation organization there. It's what he ended up founding. And so we're going to do a little deep dive on this one, and no doubt this was done for political effect so that they could say, Donald Trump, we need to fact check you about the crime is not rising, even though people have noticed crime rising, especially in some of the liberal hellhole hive minds, you know, that kind of thing. So we'll kind of talk with, we will talk with John rather here in about 20 minutes. About how they ended up fudging the numbers. That I'm surprised, though, that the FBI would get political, aren't you? It's just absolutely astounding to me that that could happen. Kevin Keating will be joining me after 7 o'clock. He's running for Medford City Council. I think it's Ward 3. He's going to be in here just a moment, and we'll talk about some of those issues. I've noticed that at the candidate forums, they're talking a lot about affordable housing and affordable housing and affordable housing and what we could do, need to do more. I'd be curious if any candidate would actually have the, you know, the wherewithal to just start talking about the truth here. Of course, one reason for incredibly expensive housing is Senate Bill 100. You restrict where you're allowed to build homes, and the cities restrict where you're allowed to put down homes, and then naturally the price will go up. We're the only state in the entire country that does centralized state land use planning, which of course was brought in to help do sustainable development. Sustainable development, otherwise known as WEF, stack and pack. You will own nothing and be happy, but you'll have your universal basic income if you stupidly pass, you know, Measure 118. Yeah, I could go off on a tirade on all this kind of stuff. But that's part of it, and part of it is Senate Bill 100. Nobody wants to actually call that baby from the early 1970s ugly, very ugly, even though it's grown into a grotesque adult now. That is certainly one aspect of it. The other part about it that nobody wants to talk about, Federal Reserve. Most people do not want to talk about the Federal Reserve's role in blowing the housing bubble. That's what they've been doing ever since 2008 when they had the housing crash. They ended up re-blowing the housing bubble. That's what it is. I got my statement from Jackson County. You know, and I feel so fortunate I was able to, you know, we bought this house out East Medford on Viewpoint for, I think, and I remember I was sweating bullets. I was sweating bullets back in 2016. Oh, $315,000. They wanted like $325,000. You know, Linda fell in love with the place, and you know, if you're ever shopping for a home, you're going home hunting and you're looking for a place to live. And then if you're a husband and your wife walks in and takes a look and just goes, oh, and you realize, okay, you're going to have to find a way to get this house. And that's the way it was with Linda and me in the house we're in now. We love our home. We really do. But at $315,000 at that point, I was sweating bullets on how we were going to do this, how we swung it. Well, we did. We did. Everything's fine. And now Jackson County says, now remember, I bought it in 2016. So 8 years. 8 years we've been there. Jackson County now says that that house, which is a reasonable house, but it's nothing particularly special. It's special for us. Is now a $500,000 home. In no sane world should my house or anyone else's house in this particular neighborhood be a $500,000. I'm sorry. It just shouldn't be. Not if we had functioning markets. Not if we had sound money. Not if we didn't have trillions of dollars of printed loot being borrowed into existence and then flooded through the economy. It's just the standard thing of many dollars chasing too few goods. But I know that's kind of deeper economics for most people, but that's the reality of it. What are Medford City Council people going to do about that? The solution is that, well, we're just going to do like what you have to do at the grocery store. And have instead of having eggs, you have to go with, some crappy carbs for your breakfast instead of protein because you can't afford the eggs, that sort of thing. Well, every time they talk about affordable housing, and I'm not getting all the people who are running for Medford City Council or the mayors or anything else like that, but they're papering over the problem. The Band-Aid, the gaping wound, is the monetary system. Just like what Tom has talked about for years here. The monetary system in cahoots then with the state saying, you can't build. That's what this is all about, ultimately. And then the inflation that has also gone throughout it. And so everybody wants affordable housing. You know what affordable housing is? The only affordable housing that they're talking about is more welfare housing. And it's you start wondering after a while, if this is the conspiracy theory just playing out, the Cloward pivot in which the Democrats don't want actually prosperous people. They want lots of people that they can eventually put on universal basic income, and then they'll never have to worry about winning an election again, because as long as their gruel keeps coming in and they're in their stack-and-pack climate-friendly equitable community in downtown Medford that they're talking about in Vision 2040, that's fine. They'll continue to get the vote. That's all that matters. They'll have a permanent underclass. We wouldn't want to industrialize because that would be carbon production. You don't want to have factories actually doing productive things here. You want them sitting around here either on transfer payments or on universal basic incomes eventually. That's the way I think the Democrats want to work out sustainable development here in downtown in Southern Oregon. And we'll make sure that you don't live out in the rural lands. So we'll make sure that we have the fire map situation. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, State Rep Wallen, not Wallen, rather, State Rep Marsh, rather, and Senator Jeff Golden, both of them sponsoring and carrying those bills. And have you noticed that they're still able to walk around here and talk and walk around the people with their fire map program, their sustainable development, rural land stripping bills? And they're still allowed to kind of walk around here and no one's really bugging them too much at all. So, yeah, there's a lot of conspiracies in play here when it comes to lack of affordable housing. And I think it's almost part of the plan. They don't want people living outside of the cities. And if you are living in the cities, you're supposed to be living in a climate-friendly, equitable community and wait for your letter from Medford Planning that's saying, oh, by the way, you can tear down your three-bedroom, one-bath house, and you can put up a bunch of crap shacks here. That's what's going on. That's what they look at as affordable housing. There's land all over this place. But if they don't want to put windmills and solar farms on it, they just want nothing on it, even if it's not good farmland. And if it is good farmland, like Central Point, thank you very much, let's put houses on that. Gosh. Yeah. All right. So how do we get affordable housing? There we go. That's my rant. What's on your mind? 770-5633, 770-KMED. I'll take some calls before we talk with Dr. Lott. We'll also talk with Kevin Keating. Then after 8 o'clock, a special treat. Special treat is going to be Donald Jeffries. Donald Jeffries has been like a JFK. He got started as a JFK assassination researcher in the mid-1970s. He's written a bunch of novels. And his latest book, though, is just absolutely fabulous. It's American Memory Hole, How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation. And like I said yesterday on the promo for today's show, just what was going on in his 9/11 chapter is worth the price of the book. Everything that they don't want you to know, everything that was forgotten, everything which was memory hold, like so much of what is going on in the United States society today. How can you make certain choices or proper choices about the future when you're always being lied about the past, huh? We'll talk with Donald about that coming up in a couple of hours.
The new Jackson County Circuit Court judge position needs a new kind of judge.
Hi, I'm Matt Stone with Stone Heating and Air, and I'm on KMED.
6:23. Okay, I started off the morning with a dyspeptic, a little bit of a rant on affordable housing. Yeah, we'll probably talk with Kevin Keating about that since he was, you know, at that candidate forum in Medford. I was not. I have other things I got to do. But including ignoring the Kamala Harris town hall, we'll have to play a bite or two of that, too. For that matter, Rembrandt's here on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Rembrandt, you go ahead and take off with your rant. Let's hear it.
Hi, Bill. I agreed totally with your previous rant, and that's something we could talk about at length in the future. But I spent some sleepless hours last night after listening to the news, and the Democrats are really, really getting desperate. And in these last few weeks, I feel they're going to be very dangerous as well as desperate. And it's going to continue after the election, no matter who wins.
What makes you say that you think that it's gotten too dangerous? How has it risen to that level, in your opinion?
Well, I hearken back to totalitarians and, you know, throughout history. And one of the things I find is that Kamala is probably closer to Hitler than she ever claims Donald Trump is. All you have to do is look back at 1932. Hitler lost the race for president in 32, and Hindenburg was afraid of him, so he put him in. And when Hitler made the statement that he was going to destroy democracy using democracy in court in 1930, in 1933, he actually, after Hindenburg died, he used the Enabling Act to get himself in. Unelected, by the way, to get himself in to a position of power where he started undermining the Weimar Republic.
Yeah, was that as he was the chancellor? Like he was given the chance?
Yeah,
he got the chancellorship in order to kind of buy him off. In other words, we'll appease him at that point,
right? That's right.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of parallels between the period prior to him coming to power in 1933 and where we are now. And he had one of the things, Bill, that he said is that his idea was, if you can get he who owns the youth owns the future. And he had four things he did. The first one was contradict the truth. The second was control the news media. The third, bring confusion and chaos. And the communists use that, too. And then finally, you propagandize the youth. And we've been doing that for 40 years. I've been a student of history for over 70 years, Bill, and I have never been more worried about this country.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk with Donald Jeffries about that to a certain extent, because court historians have done more to promote the big lie that you are referencing there than just about anybody else. And it ends up being taught in the schools here, too. A dangerous time, yeah, you don't like playing the Hitler card, you know, because it almost ends up being the, you know, the cheap shot, usually, the way most of us do it. Even when they say, you're fascist, you know, that kind of thing. It's it's when you don't really have any cogent argument that you pull out, yeah, the Hitler or the fascist card, you know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
But your point is well taken, and we're certainly, I think, at this point, given that the momentum does appear to be in President Trump's favor, what does that mean? I don't know. A lot can change even in the next 12 days. How will the count go? We can't predict here. But, yeah, there's a lot of dangerous thrashing around of a wounded animal, I think, which is going on. Right.
The last thing I'd like to say, Bill, is that I heartily recommend a book by Victor David Hansen called The End of Everything, I think it is. And I read that. It's a rough read, but it really epitomizes where we are, and the fact that our schools have been just lax in teaching anything physics. If you said, explain to me Plato's Republic and Socrates' Book 8 regarding that, they would look at you like you had two heads.
Well, I've spent my entire life, maybe you have too, recovering from public school education, and frankly, I did not get as good a public school education as my parents did, and my children did not get as good a public education as me. And you start to be able to see this. And this is why separation of child from the state and the school, separation of school and state, if we were really serious about breaking that cabal down, would be one of the first things we'd do. Rembrandt, I appreciate you bringing your artist's touch here, okay? Thank you. It's 28 after 6. Cherry's been dutifully hanging on. Hello, Cherry. How you doing?
Hi, Bill. I just have to say, after being in apartments for 20 years or so, we decided to get our first house, and it's very nice. It's 3-bedroom, 2-bath, whatever, and it was only $455. And so we bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're eating great TV dinners, though.
TV dinners aren't cheap anymore either, though, truth be told.
And thrift stores. Yeah. I got enough clothes to sink a battle.
All right, so you bought it. You bought it $455. Well, you know, how many years ago did
cash.
You? How many
cash.
Years ago? Oh, you bought cash? Really?
I paid cash.
Oh, good for you.
Almost a year ago.
Yeah. But, you know, in any sane world, in any sane monetary system right now, our crap shacks in East Medford, and they're not crap shacks, but you know what I'm getting at here, just typical old houses, should not be $500,000. Should not be $500,000 homes. It shouldn't be.
I mean, what are you going to do? You know, you gotta have a nice place to live. I'm tired of these apartments. These landlords, they won't fix stuff. You know, everything leaks.
Well, they can only fix stuff that they have the cash flow to fix, too. So I don't want to throw them all under the bus there, too, especially given the heavy regulation that they're enduring. But, you know, what told me how unsustainable that system is right now between the lack of developable land in Southern Oregon and the permission to build and the cost that cities and counties and the state impose upon you is that the first house that I ever bought in Southern Oregon was a little house on Holly Street, a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, and it was $53,000 in 1992, when we bought that. Yeah, $53,000, and it was all nice and redone, had a brand new HVAC. It was a wonderful, it was a great little starter home for us, okay? That was great there. They now call that a $300,000 house.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, now they added a bedroom to it, so I guess they did change a little bit there. But still, that little crap shack now is considered $300,000. That's a problem. But you see, the thing is, though, building a lot of welfare housing is not necessarily going to solve the problem. It is going to create more Democrats, though, for the future. Okay, and that's something that, you know, we got to be seriously talking about. Lovely hearing from you, though. 6:31 at KMED. Let me grab another call before news. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
Hey, Commissioner John West.
Commissioner, how goes the smear attacks, huh?
the Tribune is just going off saying I should have never been on the Bill Meyer show. I should have never talked about this, that it should have never been aired on there, that it's not doing justice. But that's not what I called about.
Oh, okay. All right. Because so they're saying that you shouldn't have talked about the threats that the guy did to you? You shouldn't have talked about it on the air? Why?
He said that's not the forum. I should have took it to the right forum, and that I'm just using posturing and that I'm using your show to just get my point across.
You are using the show to get my show to get your point across. And it's okay. I let people use my show to get their point across if they're making a decent point. But, you know, the idea is, though, if I take what you were talking about the other day, you know, the people over there at the Grants Pass Tribune, this online news forum, were more or less saying, hey, you either do what we say or else we're going to release bad news. You know, it's essentially what they were claiming. And so that doesn't seem right either.
Yeah, no. He's again, unhinged, as I would say. He's mad because it got out, and he says this is between the BLM and everybody that the sheriff's done wrong, and now I put the sheriff in a compromised situation because I aired it. I aired it on your radio show. I don't know what he says the sheriff's done wrong. I don't have that information. I just have what he's threatened me with.
Yeah,
and so now it's all my fault, you know. So,
okay, I'll get it. Next time you call the show, I'll get out that country song for you. It ain't my fault. Okay, whatever it is. And that's what we're...
Yeah. Well, what I called for was, you know, we have a housing program that's supposed to benefit veterans going on here in Grants Pass, and it is 26 units, And the average cost per housing, and this is supposed to be low-income housing, and they're going to rent them to them at 150% of whatever it is. And average cost starts out at $461,000 per unit.
That's affordable housing.
That's affordable housing. And rent's supposed to be between $1,500 and $2,000 a month.
That doesn't pencil at that cost. That doesn't pencil.
No. No. And they don't even have the final cost. They don't even know if it, they said it could end up being 12, 13, 15 million to build these 26 units.
Well, Commissioner, why does it cost so much for them to build those units? Is there a government regulation that requires it to be at a certain thing? I mean, what's going on? Do you know?
I have no idea. It perplexes me because I can build a 2,000 square foot house turkey for $330,000. Mm-hmm. So why are they building a smaller unit and it's costing them that much? I don't get it.
I wonder if it has to do with prevailing wage and various other things when you're doing government contracts. Why don't you look into that? I'll have you back on the show sometime. We'll talk about that.
I will.
Okay. That's really, really interesting. So for how much do they want to, these are one bedroom apartments, right? One bedroom apartments.
No, I think they're two bedroom.
Okay.
They were supposed to be for veterans at 26 units. And now they say 14 of them get veterans preference and 12 of them can go to anybody, but they call it the veterans village.
Got it. All right. I'd like to find out more about that because, $400,000 for two bedrooms, that is high. Very high in just about anyone's world. All right. Thank you, Commissioner. We'll have you back. 6:35. Dr. John Lott joins me here. We're going to talk about crime statistics, the real ones.
American Rancher Garage United in Service.
Hi. You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
6:38, always proud to bring back Dr. John R. Lott. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Of course, also famously known for More Guns, Less Crime. And you had a follow-up book on that not too long ago. Isn't that right, Dr. Lott? Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks very much for having me on. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah,
I have 10 books, but my last book is Gun Control Myths.
Yeah, that's right, Gun Control Myths. And we talked about that a little while ago. All worth picking up here. We wanted to talk about crime statistics here today because, by the way, Crime Prevention Research Center, your data you put up on crimeresearch.org, great website. And essentially, we've been hearing a talking point coming out of the Biden administration, Biden-Harris administration, that was more or less pushing the myth, at least the perceived myth for a lot of people, that violent crime was not going up. Was not going up or it had gone down. And there was all sorts of conversation about that. And what you are writing about is that it depends on how you measure things. And I don't know, was the FBI being political when they were talking about crime statistics? Maybe you could break down how we can look at these stories and so we can actually be much more sensible and draw in our conclusions that we draw about crime. Because if you talk to people in many of the larger cities, they'll tell you that they think crime's been soaring the last few years. But what do you say about the actual numbers?
Right. Well, there are different measures that we have of crime. There's the FBI, which puts out estimates of reported crimes to police. And then you have the Bureau of Justice Statistics and the Department of Justice, which puts out information on not just reported crimes, but also total crimes. They have what's called the National Crime Victimization Survey, which is a truly massive survey of about 240,000 people that they do every year, for doing it for 51 years. And we've known for a long time, for many decades, that most crimes aren't reported to police. Only about 40% or so of violent crimes are reported to police, only about 30% of property crimes. And so that's the reason why the national crime victimization data was set up. And those numbers have gone in pretty much opposite directions over the last few years. But what's also happened is that, so for the last year, we've had all these headlines and news articles, which will say crime is going down. People erroneously or mistakenly think that it's going up. And the FBI, though, has changed quietly without kind of letting people know that it changed its crime data from earlier years. So, for example, in 2022, that data comes out in October 2023, comes out the year after, the fall of the year after the data was put together for the FBI. And it originally claimed that violent crime had fallen by 2.1%. Well, when they put out the crime data this last September, last month, they didn't tell anybody explicitly about this. There's no mention in their press release. There was only one footnote in their actual report on the data that says we've updated the data for 2022. But when you go back and actually download the files and compare them to the previous year, you find that, in fact, rather than a 2.1% drop in violent crime, there was a 4.5% increase.
All right. So how do you take the same data, I guess, then, and say that it went down 2.1%, but then it actually went up 4.5%? They didn't think anyone would find it, or how do they finagle that here, Dr. Lott?
Well, I mean, that's part of the problem. They don't explain how they did it differently. Now, just back up a second. So, you know, people think that the FBI is just counting the number of crimes reported to police, and that's not quite right. I mean, there's some of that for sure, but there's police departments around the country that may only partially report crime data to the FBI, you know, let's say for 3 months of the year. There's other police departments that aren't reporting any crime data to the FBI. And the FBI doesn't put zeros in for those numbers. It guesses what the missing data is.
They make an estimate. Oh,
right.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of squishiness that can come with making an estimate. If a police department doesn't report crime to the FBI, but the FBI reports a number for them, there's a lot of room for potential squishiness, right? I mean, it'd be just realistic.
Yeah, sure. And they can go back and change how they put in those estimates. And that's partly what happened in 2022. The problem is they don't really explain. They don't explain why they made the changes in 2022. Now, they also made a lot of changes in 2021, and that's at least a little bit more transparent. But, you know, if you're going to you would hope that if you're going to have changes in something that the media has been running with for the last year, because after the 2022 numbers came out, the so-called final numbers for 2022 came out a year ago, the media has been having, as I said, headline after headline saying crime is falling. Even David Muir in the presidential debate, the final data for 2023 hadn't come out yet. And when he was saying that the FBI shows that crime is falling when he was doing this fact check on President Trump, he was wrong in two things. One is the FBI doesn't show crime. It just shows the count of the number of crimes reported to police. And secondly, now they're saying, oh, by the way, what you were referencing actually increased. It didn't decrease.
Oh.
And
So the fact check was wrong, right? The fact check was wrong.
Yeah, fact check was wrong. And in one sentence, he got a couple things wrong. But, you know, we have a real issue here with the media bias. Because when you look at it, so last month, the Department of Justice came out with two different measures of crime. It came out with the Bureau of Justice Statistics measure of total crime, and the mainstream media completely ignored that. And the reason why I think they ignored it is because it's shown a huge percentage increase in crime over the last few years. It's shown that during the Biden administration, serious violent crime has increased 55%. You've had a 42% increase in rapes, a 63% increase in robberies, a 55% increase in aggravated assaults. And, you know, whereas now, kind of with these updated data, the FBI data shows a 5% drop in violent crime over the last few years. Now, I reported violent crime. Now, there are lots of reasons why these numbers can differ from each other. I can give you one, for example. In many parts of the country, now, if you call up 911, the operator there will ask you, is the criminal there right now committing the crime? And if you say, no, the criminal's left, then they'll say, well, you can come down to the police station and wait in line, and we'll get a police report.
So even though the 911 call was the report of a crime, it doesn't get recorded in the statistics as a crime if you come down and have to fill out a report. And a lot of times, people who have that happen to them don't take the time or don't want to have to stand in line and file out a report, right, or make a report.
Exactly. Okay. It doesn't have to be a lot of times, just sometimes. If you have some people who are victims of crime, say, because look, a few years ago, they would have sent a police car out to where the crime occurred and taken a statement. But, you know, if you make it more time consuming, more difficult for people to report the crime, you're going to have some people who are going to do exactly what you just said. And they say, look, it's just not worth it to me, particularly as the arrest rates have fallen. I mean, the other thing that determines whether or not people will report a crime to police depends in part on whether they think the criminal is going to be caught and punished.
If they're not going to be caught and punished, what's the point? If they're not, right? If they're not going to be caught and punished, why would I get involved with the police or make a report or make the call? Okay.
Right.
Wow. Dr. John R. Lott is the president of Crime Prevention Research Center, and we're talking about how the FBI revised violent crime statistics and didn't tell anybody that the violent crime rates were actually much higher than first believed. And it's been making a little bit of news out there. Doctor, I'm just wondering, are we kind of experiencing the same kind of issues with crime and violence in the greater culture, with crime and violence within government schools because of their wanting to be, I'm looking for, I guess, motives here. I don't know if you can even speculate on that. But there, for a long time, there has been talk of the restorative justice trend in public schools, in which you will almost bend over backwards and do anything possible not to arrest a violent child or get that child out of the schools because you don't want it looking bad for the school statistics, because, you know, that stuff would get published.
Well, it's more than that. Look,
it is.
No, you're exactly right. It's the same thing. If you want to reduce crime, it's not rocket science. You want to make it riskier for people to commit crime.
Mm-hmm.
Higher arrest rates, higher conviction rates, longer prison sentences, well, you know, and also letting people defend themselves, all make it riskier for criminals to go and commit crime. And so during the Obama administration for schools, you had something that they referred to as kind of the, you know, the pipeline from, you know, schools to prison.
Yeah, the school to prison pipeline. Yeah, that's what they would talk about. Yes.
Right. And so basically for certain groups of students, you know, minority students that may have had historically high rates of problems, they decided that they weren't going to punish them for bad activity that they did in school. One example of this is Nicholas Cruz, who was the Parkland school shooter. Not only did the sheriff's department go out to his home 46 times because he had beaten his mom, you know, breaking her jaw and
going
to the hospital and what have you, and they never arrested him. But the school itself had many complaints about him. And because he was a minority, they didn't punish him in any way, even though he'd committed crimes around the school there. Obviously, if they had taken care of him in the way they used to before the Obama administration, then he would have been removed from the street. You know, he would have been in jail at that point. Would have been able to commit the crime he did.
Yeah, is there a case to be made that that same sort of mentality has remained within the criminal justice system, in this case, about the reporting of crime statistics here, like you've talked about with the FBI?
Yeah, no, sure. You have, look, we've had cuts in police budgets. We've had a huge number of retirements of police. We've had district attorneys in many parts of the country who have been refusing to prosecute violent criminals. We've had liberal judges who have been had light sentences or actually, you know, releasing large numbers of inmates from local jails and prisons. And you've had bail reform where people who've committed crimes are released on little or no bail and they go out and commit other crimes. You know, so we've had across the board, we've had changes in many parts of the criminal justice system that have made it so it's not risky for criminals to go and commit crimes.
And because of that, you're naturally going to see an uptick in that. So is there any way to reform this, or how would you best reform this? And when we actually hear crime statistics, know that we're actually getting the truth of it and a true, transparent, jaundiced look, you know, for good, bad, or ugly, you know, that kind of thing. What would you do? What needs done?
To take your second question first. What you need to do is don't pay a lot of attention to the FBI estimates of reported crime.
Okay.
What you need to look at is the national crime victimization data that's out there from the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That's a much better measure of what's happening,
because it's actually going out searching for and compiling statistics of actual crime victims, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay. Rather than the reported crime aspect, because as you had mentioned,
you want to get a measure of total crime, and also it's a better measure of reported crime. They break it down by both reported and unreported, so. For 2022, for example, while the updated FBI data shows a 4.5% increase in reported crime, the national crime victimization data shows a 29.1% increase in reported crime.
Oh, my God. See, that is a massive discrepancy in perception of crime, because you would talk to people, especially in some of the urban cities that have had arguably, you know, all you have to do is watch YouTube videos sometimes about street crime and you see what's going on in some of the cities. But everybody says that that crime would actually go down. It's like, OK, you're going to believe what you're seeing on the streets, or are you going to believe what the FBI is saying? Right. What a discrepancy. I mean, there is disparity.
Right. Well, you have a situation where I think a lot of that difference has to do with the kind of the 911 discussion that we had before. My guess is a lot of people think that calling up 911 amounts to reporting a crime. But the FBI doesn't count it, as we talked about earlier, until there's actually a police report filled out. And if you have to go down to the police station, you may have a situation where there are people who say, well, I called up 911. I told them about the crime. No, I didn't go down to the police station and wait in line for a police report to be filled out. And that's, I think, part of the difference there.
Very good. All right. So the Bureau, what is the report we should pay attention to rather than the FBI's report? Which one is that again?
The Bureau of Justice Statistics.
Okay.
Has something called the National Crime Victimization Data.
All right. Very good. By the way, Dr. Locke, do you have this out on either crimeresearch.org or have you released an article?
Yeah, it's on crimeresearch.org.
Okay. All right.
And links to the underlying data if people want to check it.
All right. Very good. Well, I appreciate you bringing light and maybe hopefully a little disinfectant to what looks like some kind of stinky statistics, you know?
Right.
All right.
Well, it's been a big issue out there, and the media's been constantly reporting on it. It's just disappointing to me that, you know, last month when you have both the FBI data estimates on reported crime and the national crime victimization data on total crime, the mainstream media just completely ignores the national crime victimization data, because I think it doesn't fit the narrative that they want to have out there.
Gee, and you would hope that the mainstream media would actually want to get the truth out about crime so that maybe they could take care of the crime victims and have fewer crime victims in the future. Then that would be worth talking about, all right? Dr. Lott, we appreciate your time this morning, crimeresearch.org. Dr. John R. Lott's president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And he is the guy that is there for the data, the numbers, and he's definitely the person you want when you want those numbers, and he's got them all there, all right? Dr. Lott, always a pleasure. Take care. Be well.
All right. Thank you very much.
657, you're on KMED and 99.3 KBXG. Once again, Dr. Lott, crimeresearch.org.
Representative Kim Wallen is a strong advocate for Medford in our state capital.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Jay, before 7 o'clock, KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass is where you happen to be. We're going to break for Town Hall News here in just a moment, and after that, we're going to have good conversation with Kevin Keating. Kevin Keating is running for city council seat in Medford, Ward 4. And he's a St. Mary's School history and business teacher. Now, it would seem to me that especially if you're a business teacher, you'd have a pretty good bead of the various things that drive the lack of affordable housing. I wonder if any of that ever gets brought up. I do find it fascinating that people even think that. Well, I'm going to elect someone who is going to magically give us affordable housing. Well, that doesn't happen. There's a lot of macroeconomic stuff going on here. I'm just concerned, though, that under the guise of getting more affordable housing here in Southern Oregon, the solution will translate into we want government welfare housing, and we don't want people actually working and being productive, and we're just going to shove everybody who needs affordable housing into that climate-friendly, equitable community downtown that former Governor Brown ended up putting in with an executive order. How is it that one governor can just do an executive order and just induce communism, just commit the cities and drag them into communism? Yeah, it's just, I know it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Kevin, this may be a bad day for you to come in for a talk. He's probably on the way in right now. But we'll have a conversation after news and then some open phones on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Donald Jeffries has an interesting book out called American Memory Hole. It's perfect for this particular day of the week. Everything that the government types would hope that you would forget or that you never would know in the first place about our history. We'll have that all coming up.